I welcome everybody to Colorado, by the way, and hope you are enjoying our fabulous weather, because again, you're going to see it snow. Yeah. And you're going to wonder, why is it so warm and then it will snow? Welcome to Colorado. The other thing you may be wondering is, why is a pharmacist up here at a maternal in public health? Why are you here? Well, the interesting thing is that, and especially I'm trained in cardiology, my fellowship is in cardiology, and one of the interesting things that we have a hard time with is smoking cessation. And with my background in epidemiology, this is a perfect marriage between the two. And this is actually a question that has not been answered. And particularly here in Colorado, we had a fabulous environment in order to explore this particular question. So that's why I'm here. And I'm very excited today to present our experiences in the evaluation of the citywide ban, citywide smoking ban in Pueblo, Colorado, particularly evaluating the impact on maternal smoking, as well as some fetal outcomes. Just as for conflicts of interest, I just want to let you know that we have none, and that financial support, this is none. This is completely investigator-initiated. Okay, I'm basically here at a public health symposium. So these data that I'm about to present are really, I'm singing to the choir, just kind of like, duh. But the bottom line is, we know that tobacco use remains one of the leading causes of morbidity and mortality worldwide, and that's a shame. And particularly, one of the things that we should not forget is the aspect that surrounds secondhand smoke. And I have to say, I'm very thankful to my first speaker for just setting the stage for me with regards to some of the biology and pathophysiology surrounding this. But when we talk about secondhand smoke, do not forget that it too is a major killer. In fact, I think this is a slight underestimate. But about 3,000 deaths occur from lung cancer related to secondhand smoke, and about 50,000 deaths from heart disease. And again, you can see where my background kind of comes into play. But one thing we must not forget is with regards to our most vulnerable population, and that's the unborn child. And in particular, we know that antenatal exposure to tobacco smoke, both primary and environmental, plays a very large role in low birth weight as well as premature births. In fact, one of the interesting things to think about is the societal costs related to both of these. For premature births, the Institutes of Medicine have estimated that we spend about $26 billion. Both low birth weight and premature births not only lead to significant morbidity and mortality perinatally, but also play a large role as risk factors in future adult diseases, particularly cardiovascular disease. And let me name a few for you: hypertension, heart failure, hyperlipidemia, acute myocardial infarction, all of which carry a huge societal burden. So what have we done in order to curtail this? The first smoking ban was instituted about 400 years ago. Of course, that was in Europe, but eventually we caught on. Or have we caught on? Unfortunately, we haven't. In fact, if you look at the data, only 20 states exercise a statewide 100% smoke-free workplace, restaurant, and bar law. That is so surprising. Most are primarily just related to the city. In fact, we have a large amount of robust data when it comes to outcomes related to smoking bans on adults. Reduction in acute MI, reduction in acute coronary syndrome, overall reduction in incidence of heart failure. Even in childhood, we find there's a reduction in overall incidence of hospitalizations related to childhood asthma, just recently published in the New England Journal just a few months ago. Unfortunately, a gap exists. And that gap is regarding the association of these smoking bans on fetal outcomes. Again, our most vulnerable population, and also on maternal smoking here in the United States. With this in mind, this was our objective. We wanted to assess the odds of maternal smoking, low birth weight, and we defined these with a strict definition and a very broad definition. Our strict definition is based on the World Health Organization, 2,500 grams. But when you tease out and start looking at the data, that the devil in the details, according to data from the CDC, in particular populations such as African American and as well as Hispanic, actually there are some fairly poor outcomes defining low birth weight as less than 3,000 grams. So a priori, we included this one as well. We also looked at preterm births, less than 37 weeks gestation. This was in singleton mothers. We evaluated before and after a citywide smoking ban was implemented, and we compared our data to a similar county with no such ordinance. All righty, let me tell you a little bit about our ban and why we chose what we chose. First of all, here you see, here is El Paso County and here is Pueblo County. Now, on July 1st, 2003, Pueblo, the city of Pueblo, was the very first city in the state of Colorado to truly implement a citywide smoking ordinance prohibiting smoking inside workplaces and all public buildings. So what? Well, let me tell you why. Well, number one, it was so strictly enforced, it ended up on every newscast here in the state. It was pretty brutal. The cops really enforced this one. Law enforcement really enforced it. And so that was something that made it very attractive when we evaluated it. Secondly, it's based on 2003 data. Pueblo had the highest percentage of smokers here in the state. And it was at that time 23%. The other interesting point is that 80% of people within Pueblo County live within the city limits of Pueblo itself. So we had a captive population. So that too made it, from an epidemiologic standpoint, very attractive. Well, what about El Paso County? Well, El Paso County, we wanted to choose a county that was actually somewhat close. It was about still 45 miles away. It included the city of Colorado Springs. The nice thing too is that within El Paso County, about 77% of individuals live within Colorado Springs, and the smoking rate was almost just as high as within Pueblo, but no ordinance actually existed. So again, that was our comparator, our county. So what about our methods? This was a retrospective observation data analysis, and I'm very thankful to the Colorado Department of Public Health for allowing us to have access to the Colorado Birth Registry and Infant Mortality Registry. We evaluated singleton births from mothers who resided in the city of Pueblo and before and after the ban was implemented. We compared this again with El Paso County. Just want to show you our N, which was about 6,714, and again within El Paso, about 32,281. We basically looked at data 2 years, roughly 2 years before and 2 years after. So we're looking at April 1st, 2001 to July 1st, 2003, right prior to the implementation of the ban, and again, April 1st, 2004 to July 1st, 2006. Like with most of these studies, we use descriptive statistics by multivariable logistic regressions, and we adjusted for multiple covariates. Rather than listing them for you, I want to show you our models that we actually used. Now, these look pretty involved, but model one included primarily just demographic aspects of the mother. Model two included model one, but we also then included lifestyle modification issues, so such as smoking status and alcohol consumption. Model 3A included model one and model two, but the next we actually built on risk factors for preterm birth. Okay, and this is actually, we were bound by the limitations of the Colorado Birth Registry, but we also included our colleagues from OB to make sure that we were capturing all of our risk factors. And for 3B, we included Model 1 and Model 2, but also then the risk factors associated this was for low birth weight, this was for preterm birth, a little bit more in terms of overall risk factors. I'm just going to jump to the data. Jump straight to the chase. What did we find? If you look at our unadjusted percentages, again, here's percent pre-ban, post-ban, and our p-values, smoking status of mother, preterm, low birth weight, and low birth weight using a much larger definition. And you can see El Paso, or Pueblo, the city, El Paso County. The bottom line is we saw a statistically significant, but about a 2% reduction in overall smoking. We saw that it actually increased in El Paso County, as you can see. The other points I want to highlight, though, is with regards to no statistically significant difference in terms of low birth weight, but also in terms of percentages. But also, we did find in El Paso County, when we used a much broader definition, a statistically significant increase pre and post ban. Again, unadjusted percentages, just to wet your whistle so you kind of get an appreciation. All right, well, let's look at our models. From here, we see, number one, model unadjusted, model one, model two, model 3A. What we're looking at here is low birth weight. We're looking at less than 2,500 grams, less than 3,000 grams. I want to highlight that our reference group was El Paso County pre-ban. What you find here, again, let's focus in upon the typical standard definition. What we find is we saw a trend towards a reduction, but unfortunately, once we basically included risk factors, it really washed out. When we use the broader definition that has been used by the CDC before, what we find is, again, a statistically significant reduction with unadjusted all the way to model two, which again included demographic variables as well as lifestyle choices. However, once we included risk factors, again, we lost our significance, but still a trend towards a reduction. These data don't surprise me. Unfortunately, it seems that other data that have been published, particularly in Massachusetts, has been shown that maybe perhaps maternal smoking and exposure may not correlate so well with low birth weight. But unlike some of the other data that have been published, particularly in Europe, and I'll highlight this in a second, we did see a trend towards a reduction, or a trend towards a reduction. But what about preterm birth? Now remember, why focus on preterm birth? Because society pays $26 billion a year. So when we looked at these data, we were very excited. Unadjusted, model one, model two, and then model three, including all of our covariates, including risk factors. And what we found was, and again, our reference group was El Paso County pre-ban, again, p-value of 0.05, about a 23% reduction in the odds of preterm birth pre and post ban. So we were very, very, very excited with regards to these data. We took it one step further. We wanted to see, what about the odds of maternal smoking? Well, in this case, we just controlled for demographic variables, but for the most part, we saw a statistically significant reduction in the odds of maternal smoking. Again, I want to highlight that our reference group was El Paso County pre-ban, and we saw it's about a 39%, 38% overall adjusted odds of maternal smoking with this particular implementation. What does this mean? Well, what do we conclude? Well, first of all, we found that a legislative smoking ban can actually possibly curtail smoking, maternal smoking, as well as potentially significantly reduce the odds of preterm birth, but not so much low birth weight. Our data, what was very exciting, is initially you're like, wow, well, this is more like an ecologic study, you know. But what do the data show elsewhere? Well, we have nothing in the United States to compare this to, number one. Okay, but we do have one study that has been published out of Dublin, Ireland, just recently published, again, at the beginning of this year. And in this study, they basically evaluated pre- and post-ban from looking at births within a very large hospital. And the bottom line they found was about a 25% reduction in the risk of preterm births with a 12% decline in maternal smoking. What I want to highlight, though, is I was very excited. Our data somewhat reflect that of worldwide data. And so that made me feel, wow, I think we're on the right track here. But they found a 43% increase in the risk of low birth weight births. And what the investigators really kind of, and again, I have to look, when I look back at their models, they weren't as robust as ours, but I have to say, when you look back at this, they basically attribute this to more secular trends. And in fact, the majority of the data looking at maternal smoking and low birth weights come from these investigators. Actually, there is a study, again, as I mentioned, in Massachusetts. What's our implication? Well, first of all, we believe this is the first U.S. study with data indicating that pregnant mothers and their fetuses represent an important population to survey in terms of health and cost effects of smoke-free ordinances, even when purported exposure may seem deceptively low. You know, when I get asked this question, well, what do you think about this, Robert, with regards to these data? I say, you know what I hope? I hope this acts as a nidus. I hope this acts as a stimulus to ask other states to start to evaluate their data, particularly with regards to individual cities. As I said, even Colorado, Believe it or not, we do not have a smoke-free ordinance. We have one in Denver, we have one in Colorado Springs now, and we have one in Pueblo. But it is not statewide. My hope is this adds fuel to the fire, and I'm ready to step up to the plate in order to get this message out. Unfortunately, again, we do have limitations. And what are those? The Colorado Birth Registry does not include maternal smoking. And any individuals who work in the area of smoking research know that maternal smoking plays a very large role. Number two is there's the possibility of underreporting of maternal smoking and alcohol, as that does have a stigma, as we just heard, to mothers. But one of the data points I was really hoping to capture, and unfortunately this is a big limitation, is the work status of the mother. And where did she work? Unfortunately, there were just too many missing data in order to incorporate this into the model, and therefore we could not include it. And as again, that's one aspect that I'm very disappointed about. The other problem is movement. Remember that a mother can be employed in the city, however, live outside of the city. We intentionally chose the places that we did because the majority of mothers lived in city limits. And so hopefully we controlled for this. The other is we do not know in terms of the trimester of exposure. This is crucial when it comes to, as we heard already in our second presentation, about some of the negative effects that occurs with smoking. So I'd like to conclude by acknowledging some of my co-investigators. Julia Slako, who is a PhD candidate in pharmaceutical outcomes, who is now at her dissertation stage, been an excellent colleague. One of my own colleagues, Dr. Ann Libby, who we stole from the Colorado School of Public Health. Very excited to have her. She's an economist, actually, in pharmaceutical outcomes. She was very important in with regards to this this particular protocol. Our mentors from the Colorado School of Public Health, Dr. Denny Lazat and Dr. Jill Norris. But most important, I want to make one big plug, and that's for the department, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, particularly the Division of Health Statistics, who I would never have been able to conduct these analyses without their support. Again, I want to thank you so very much, and I guess we'll open these up for questions. At the end. Thank you so very much.
Okay. So, who would like to have some questions? Anyone? Just raise your hand. Please stand up and introduce yourself. And this is an intimate setting, so we can get to know each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's more of a comment to the first speaker about the appropriateness of methods, contraceptive methods for women with substance abuse. And I just wanted to make the point that IUDs are appropriate for all women, regardless of whether they use substances or not, or whether they have multiple partners or not, because even if you use a pill, you should use condoms. So I just want to make that point because there's lots of misconceptions about IUDs, and they can be one of our best long-acting reversible methods that are very highly effective. So that's the only point I wanted to make. And for the third speaker, I wanted to ask, I'm just kind of curious about why you use the pre-ban period in the El Paso County as your reference group, rather than Pueblo, since the ban took place there pre.
Actually, it was a power-related issue. That's an excellent question about pre. We actually ended up using El Paso for the same point of the large number, of the 32,000.
Right, it was 32,000.
Yeah, and actually that's the reason why we did. But that's an excellent, excellent point. But that's primarily the reason why. That dang power issue always catches you in the end, doesn't it? So anyway.
Okay, thanks.
Please stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And please introduce.
And my question is for Dr. Grant. I'm just interested a little bit more about your implementation program. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that it was evidence-based. So kind of what is the research that built that program? And then who are your case managers? Are your home visitation being done by nurses or community health workers? Just a little bit more about your program.
Okay. Did people hear that question? Or do you want me to repeat it?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so the Parent-Child Assistance Program is evidence-based. It was a SAMHSA-funded study back in 1991. We had an intervention group compared to a control group, and we had positive outcomes at the end of the 3 years. We've published those outcomes. And it was based on those outcomes that the state legislature subsequently has funded the program. So we've continued to do evaluation. We don't have a control group anymore because once it turned into a community public health intervention, you know, the state won't fund comparison groups. So there's we've done one. We had a medical student did a study following the women 3 years after they had graduated from PCAP. So they had been in the intervention for 3 years, followed them 3 years later, and found significant outcomes in the length of time they had been clean and sober, the reduced incarceration, increased stability of housing, which was really important to us. Mothers who were in stable housing, that means that they're capable of keeping a household together, paying their bills, keeping their drug-using friends out. So it was increased sobriety, significant reduction in subsequent delivery, reduction in incarceration, and increased housing. So that was exciting for us, that those, you know, long-term. Right now, we are using our state. We've just started a study looking at the state administrative databases to look at our mothers from the early 90s, you know, looking at the outcomes 10, 15 years later, and also looking at their kids to see how those children are doing. So that's exciting. Our problem is that the control group was small in the beginning. So. And the question about who are the case managers, that's an excellent question. It's a paraprofessional model, so meaning the women we hire as case managers are not, they don't have degrees in the nursing or social work. What we do value is hiring women who've been through similar circumstances themselves, and that's the key to what we do. About 60% of our case managers are in recovery themselves, but they have to have been clean and sober for at least 5 years, and not just clean and sober. The definition of recovery that has come out in the last couple years from the Betty Ford Institute with treatment professionals, recovery isn't just being clean and sober. It also means high quality of life and health, you know, maternal health and child health. So citizenship is part of all that. So it means becoming part of your community again, you know, becoming a person, becoming contributing. So our case managers have demonstrated that in their own lives. So for mothers who are really high risk addicts, it's just amazing to have somebody come into your living room and say, hey, you know, I used to be a heroin addict, and I'm going to walk you through this, and it's going to be tough, but I'm going to be with you and show you how to do it. So the other thing about that is also with the relationship model, you know, we really, the data on relational theory, it comes out of the Stone Center at Wellesley starting like 30 years ago. Anyway, it's really, really persuasive that having a positive influence in your life, having somebody who really believes in you can be more effective than the actual concrete services you receive. So that, for us, that means you've got this advocate case manager, and so we have to pay really close attention to our administrative structure so that we don't have high turnover. If you have high turnover, you lose the relationship. So we have exquisite supervision by master's level mental health therapists. So, you know, very intensive supervision, group staffings, there's a lot of support for the case managers. So does that answer your question? Okay.
Hello, my name is Victoria Hallmeyer. I'm a home visitation nurse in Larimer County here in Colorado. Nurse Family Partnership Program. Mm-hmm. And actually my question is for Dr. Page. The question that I had was sort of hypothetical regarding low birth weight, if you took into consideration altitude with that correlation.
That is the $24 question. And so that's one thing that actually, so I've been talking to my colleague, Dr. Slako over here, about possibly comparing some of our data, if we took into account altitude, with that sea level, and to see whether or not that came into play. And so that's an excellent, excellent point, and we thought about it. Unfortunately, we didn't have it, and you know, the other thing too was, is we had zip codes of the moms, but the other thing too is we could find out. There is a slight difference, as you well know, from Colorado Springs and also between Pueblo, a slight difference in LH. We could look at that, but I think it got too specific and we wouldn't be able to access the data. But we'd like to compare our results with another one. In fact, I talked to Dr. Slako about that about 2 weeks ago, but I don't know if she's willing to do it for us to look at it. But that's a very good point. I think I do believe that there's going to be a correlation.
I'd like to see that.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, we will be able to. That's a great question. Thank you for asking it. Basically, this was a screener, as you said, and this were, you know, first trimester African-American women coming in, and this is their first visit. So it's highly likely, since it's unintended, this may be the first one for them to understand they are pregnant. But we are following them because they are going to be part of the clinical trial. So we are following them, and we are actually looking at a lot of the behavioral outcomes even more. So we will have great data. And one of my collaborator is here. Gabby, do you think that's
accurate?
Yes, the navigators are actually, this is a different model from the case management model, but this is a navigation model. Some of them get navigation, some of them don't. But they get those who are not getting the navigation, they get the standard of care, you know, whatever that may be. And then the other ones would get really an intensive kind of a model where they will be educated about this. And since they already have identified they are, having these issues, definitely clinicians are going to take into that and, they will be provided the services. And we also have a quit line, which is a separate study that was conducted, which was more of a social marketing. And once they are identified, they are sent to the quit line, and they do a good job in terms of, and preliminary data showed that there were some reduction in terms of smoking, so that's also another thing. All right, thanks.
There are a few married, though. The number of married women is quite small, but it was single and married together.
Thank you. Another question for Dr. Masha. Now that you found in your preliminary findings the correlation or the association of with depression, will you begin utilizing the Edinburgh or the
That's a serious consideration that we are doing right now. So yes, I mean, the short answer is yes. And the long answer would be we're looking into further research to actually see, because a lot of clinicians, when you think of practical implication, when as a researcher, definitely we go through a series of, you know, batteries where you ask a lot of questions. In clinical setting, that doesn't happen. And unless you make it really practical, you're not gonna see that happen. So we're really looking into different methodologies in terms of future research, trying to incorporate that work. I think you have a point.
I just want to follow up on that. Uh-huh. I'm Libby from Colorado. We do a lot of primary care-based research on mental health problems, and there are many validated short measures mm-hmm. for depression that would mm-hmm. be easy to use and are, in fact, used by clinicians mm-hmm. in primary care practices, mm-hmm. like the PHQ-9 is one.
Yes, that's the one we're considering at this point.
I encourage you, so you can really right. say that you have depression because you actually
yes.
don't.
Yeah, we don't know for sure, but this is a high indication, and there seem to be a huge correlation. So we're looking into it further. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Oh, it's definitely, I believe. So the question is can you do this statewide? You know, I have to say I'm very disappointed in my state. We are the leanest and the most active, but yet we still support smoking nationwide, and it's just very sad. But I do believe, even in the state of South Carolina, I believe, which I'm from, in fact, my family was tobacco farmers. Anyway, but the bottom line was is that they actually, I think they have a smoking ban. So it's, I believe that there is the ability, yes. It's just getting it on the ballot.
And it should be another one of those sort of bullet points, like that when we talk about what these bans have done, they reduced possible emissions of heart attacks, now we can say.
We can actually suggest now that it has an effect upon our most vulnerable population.
I'm Cindy Morgan, and I'm from Montana, and the data from Helena, Montana, mm-hmm. during that citywide smoking ban was very influential in the statewide smoking ban in Montana. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank Colorado and Pablo for they actually did the same study on myocardial infarction.
Yeah, I did. I most certainly saw. In fact, in the paper we're writing, I've referenced the data.
Yeah, with Dr. Shepherd. So uh-huh. it confirmed those early studies in Helena, Montana. So yeah. I do think the citywide bans are ammunition for statewide smoking ban.
Thank you so much for bringing that up.
Checking out our two following orals and our poster session this afternoon. Have a great time.